dappled light shines through a thick forest canopy, creating a dazzling pattern on the verdant world below. A small green lizard dozes in a patch of sun. Her scales gleam in the light, her chest gently rising and falling with each tranquil breath in and out. All is peaceful. But suddenly, she feels a tremor. The puddles of water on the forest floor ripple as if the earth itself is moving. There is a crashing sound. Something huge is moving towards her. The noise grows nearer, and she darts away mere seconds before a gargantuan hand rips away the branch she had just been resting on. The hand is covered in coarse hair and belongs to an animal that stands 3 meters tall and weighs up to 300 kilograms. It is Gigantopithecus, and at nearly twice the size of a modern adult male gorilla, he is unchallenged in this broad-leaved realm. Unconcerned with the comings and goings of lesser creatures, he doesn't even notice the presence of the little reptile, now safely perched higher up in her tree, watching him through wide, unblinking eyes. Methodically, he strips the leaves from the tree branch and drops the bare wood to the ground, before effortlessly ripping off another. And yet, for all the foliage this giant ape voraciously consumes, he is perpetually hungry. Like many large herbivores, his bulk demands a near constant intake of food, and food is becoming harder to find in this changing world. Gigantopithecus quickly exhausts the tree's offerings, so he lumbers off to find something else to satisfy his hunger. But before long, the density of the trees begins to wane, giving way to an expansive stretch of open land. The giant ape pauses at the forest's edge, surveying the unfamiliar landscape. There is nothing for him here. With a low rumble that resonates in his barrel-like chest, he turns back, resigned to continue his relentless quest for nourishment within the confines of an ever-shrinking forest. But his quest is ultimately a fruitless one. Soon enough, he and the rest of his kind will die out, leaving no heirs behind to inherit the forested kingdoms of southern China. We might imagine that this beast lived many millions of years in the past, but research suggests that Gigantopithecus might have survived until a mere 200,000 years ago. Hominins have been living in China for over 1 million years, meaning that our ancestors breathed the same air and trod the same earth as these giants. But the extinction of Gigantopithecus blackii was by no means a one-off. Long before this giant species walked the earth, the ape family tree had been blighted by extinction for millennia. Indeed, if we look back between 10 and 20 million years ago, we see a very different world. From Germany in the northwest to Thailand in the southeast, apes walked, swung, climbed, and ran. Some, as Gigantopithecus did, reached awe-inspiring size, and yet others, like Simiolus, weighing in at less than 4 kilograms, took the opposite path and evolved to have surprisingly tiny bodies. This was the Miocene, a golden age, a true planet of the apes, when non-human apes were at their peak of numbers, geographic spread, and variety. And yet, in the modern world, the great ape family is but a shadow of its former self. There are only 8 species of great ape alive today, and many of those are close to extinction. So what cataclysmic events must have taken place to lead to such a drastic decline? What was it that allowed just a few remaining genera to cling on to life while others faded into oblivion? And what propelled one lineage in particular, the hominins, to rise up and conquer the planet like no other species before? How did we survive? It is a chilly day in 1798, and a sealed crate has just arrived at the British Museum. According to the label, it has travelled many hundreds of miles across the sea, all the way from the distant shores of Australia. The museum academics are eager to open the delivery and find out what exotic treasures await them within. They call to each other, knocking on doors around the building, hastening to gather everyone. As the crate is pried open, the gentlemen lean in. There is a palpable sense of expectation in the room, but what the men see inside defies logic. It is an animal pelt, but it's unlike anything they've ever seen before. The pelt is clearly mammalian, for it possesses a coat of smooth brown fur and a long, flat tail, not unlike that of a beaver. But remarkably, it also has webbed feet and a duck-like bill. But after many days of rigorous study, it becomes clear that this is a bona fide specimen. And over the years, the platypus, as the animal came to be known, evolved from a subject of skepticism to a pivotal species in the study of mammalian evolution. For the platypus is unlike other mammals. It lays eggs. It comes from an ancient line that evolved tens of millions of years before placentals or marsupials, when dinosaurs ruled the earth. Today, platypuses live only in the freshwater rivers and streams of eastern Australia and Tasmania. But 65 million years ago, extinct platypuses, along with many other monotreme genera, lived in what is now South America and the Antarctic as well, suggesting that they were once dispersed across a huge part of the supercontinent Gondwana. Just as apes once thrived all over Africa and Eurasia, but are now comparatively rare, there are now just 5 monotreme species left on Earth, and the platypus is the very last of its genus. And so is it the fate of all species, no matter how ecologically successful they are, to someday succumb to extinction? What is it that causes lineages to experience such drastic losses in diversity, and for some to disappear altogether? Our planet is home to millions of life forms, including over 435,000 known species of plants, 150,000 of fungi, and 1.2 million described species of animals. And yet scientists estimate up to 99.9% of all life that has ever existed on Earth is now extinct. From the weird and wonderful creatures that burst forth in the Cambrian explosion, like Anomalocaris and Hallucigenia, to the 25-foot Protaxity fungi of the Devonian period, everything, eventually, comes to an end. Extinction occurs when a species, genus, or a larger group ceases to exist, leaving no living members. At its core, extinction results from the inability of a species' birth rates to exceed or match its death rates over time, leading to the eventual decline of its population to zero. Based on the fossil record, scientists have calculated that the Earth's baseline rate is about one species going extinct per million each year. This constitutes a normal rate of background extinction. These species generally succumb to gradual changes in their environments, or the evolution of a competitor or predator species. But not all extinctions are gradual. Mass extinctions are brought about through extraordinary circumstances. Think volcanic eruptions, asteroid impacts, floods, or rapid climatic changes. Scientists refer to the biggest mass extinctions in evolutionary history as the Big Five. To qualify for this exclusive list, an extinction event has to have wiped out at least 75% of all species on Earth. The first of the Big Five mass extinctions took place at the end of the Ordovician, around 445 million years ago. Ice sheets advanced, changing ocean currents and creating a harsh climate in the equatorial and mid-latitude regions, which killed off a massive 85% of species. Indeed, the most famous of the Big Five, the Cretaceous-Paleogene extinction event, eradicated 75%, with the effects of a huge extraterrestrial impact ending the lives of every single non-avian dinosaur, pterosaur, and marine reptile almost overnight. And that barely even compares to the aptly named Great Dying at the end of the Permian some 250 million years ago, volcanic eruptions in Siberia spewed toxic gas that acidified the oceans, and wildfires blazed over the Earth's forests, leaving the Earth with a mind-boggling 90% fewer species than it had before the mass extinction took hold. It can be hard to reconcile just how our planet was able to move on from such events. But even though mass extinctions bring about suffering on an unimaginable scale, it is this very feature that makes them capable of reshaping the course of life on Earth. By driving so many species to extinction, they clear the way for the emergence of new ones. And sometimes, entire new ecosystems are born. And this is the key thing to understand about evolution. Extinction is a vital part of the process. Over the Earth's history, the rate of extinction intensity has seen countless fluctuations. Our planet's changing ecosystems are never-ending, leading to conditions that have threatened or ended many of life's lineages. And our own is no exception. Our taxonomic family is Hominidae, which comprises humans and the other great apes, both living and extinct. Within the hominid, our great ape family, we see evidence for the extinction of primates that were once widespread, diverse, and successful. With now only four living genera, we great apes are much less diverse than the other primate families, like the lemurs or the monkeys. But the living great apes are merely a snapshot of the diversity and geographic spread that once existed in our evolutionary family. Indeed, the fossil record reveals a time when our primate ancestors were far more numerous and varied, and their stories are now being told through the fragments of bone and teeth they left behind. In this ancient world, we find not only the likes of Gigantopithecus, the largest primate that ever lived, but a whole menagerie of more ancient species. From Oreopithecus in what is now called Italy, to Samburupithecus in modern-day Kenya, these ancient apes paint a picture of an evolutionary journey bursting with variety. And it was especially during the central portion of the Miocene, 10 to 20 million years ago, that the great apes appeared to be on the path to success. They'd originated just prior, during the early stages of the epoch, and within a few million years they were numerous, diverse, and widespread, with up to 100 species ranging across the Earth throughout this period. It truly was a planet of the apes. Discovering a new species is every paleontologist's dream, but sometimes it gets even better. In 2007, a team of researchers led by Professor Ayla Sevim Errol discovered a whole new genus of extinct ape from the vertebrate fossil site of Çanakkale in central Anatolia. A genus is a group of related species that share common features. Discovering a species would be like knowing lions exist, then discovering a tiger. But discovering a genus would be having no idea lions, tigers, jaguars, or leopards exist, then finding one of them that might hint at the existence of the rest. This groundbreaking discovery from Çanakkale sparked a 16-year-long investigation by the team who found it, and finally, in late 2023, they published their results. Not only was the ape skull a representative of a previously unknown genus, it bore striking similarities to another family of apes, one that no one expected to find in the late Miocene deposits of Turkey. Although a couple of other extinct ape species have been recovered from the sun-baked earth of Anatolia, Anadiluvius, the ape found at Çanakkale, doesn't look much like either of them. Instead, it looks more like the late Miocene apes from Africa. With striking differences in its palate, face, neocranium, mandible, and dental morphology, Anadiluvius fits neatly into the hominin subbranch of the Hominidae family, the subbranch that includes us. Anadiluvius existed in the late Miocene, around 8.7 million years ago, more than 5 million years before the Homo genus arose. It serves as an example of one branch of the great ape family trying to forge a new path, in response to the changing world around it. Perhaps its descendants survived, migrating to Africa to give rise to later apes and eventually us, or perhaps they did not. The evidence is still not clear. Either way, Anadiluvius was far from alone in the Miocene, the period from about 23 to 5 million years ago, for it lived near the end of a time that would see both the rise and fall of the Golden Age of Apes. 23 million years ago, the Oligocene epoch came to an end. It had been a time of immense change, characterized by significant events such as the closing of the Great Tethys Sea and the formation of ice sheets at the poles for the first time since the Permian period, some 276 million years before. Not only that, but the continents began to take on a mostly modern look by the close of the Oligocene, and the world saw the beginning of a long global cooling trend that would continue into the Miocene and beyond. But even as the Oligocene gave way to the Miocene, the global climate was still relatively warm, by as much as 5 degrees warmer than it is today. As a result, many coastal areas, such as parts of Asia and what is now Florida, were flooded by high sea levels, and vast forests spread from the tropics to much of the northern and southern hemispheres. And so through a modern lens, the Miocene is a characteristic time of transition, as if nature suddenly decided it was time to redecorate. At the onset of the epoch, many ancient forms of life had met their end, leaving ample opportunity for newer, more modern kinds of animals and plants to emerge. Primitive whales like Basilosaurus gave way to baleen whales, dolphins, and porpoises, while on land, the herbivorous condylarths and brontotheres were being replaced by grazing horses, antelope, and the ancestors of elephants. And in the trees, a new family of primates had just recently diverged from their monkey-like ancestors. These were the apes, and while their lineage began in the very early days of the Miocene with a creature known as Proconsul, it's not until the middle years of the epoch that they truly came into their own. For by around 13 million years ago, the Earth was home to an astonishing variety of apes. Dryopithecus, with more mobile shoulders than the earliest apes, could be seen swinging through the trees in much of Europe and Asia. Civopithecus, unlike the ancestor of the orangutan, reveals a striking resemblance to its modern descendants and lived in India. And Oreopithecus, an enigmatic ape with adaptations for a partially bipedal stance, hints at the diverse evolutionary paths that the ape lineage was beginning to explore. All in all, scientists estimate that there could have been as many as 100 ape species ranging through the Miocene world, and much of their famed diversity originated in the middle part of the epoch. But why did this era witness such an extraordinary proliferation of apes, and why don't we see such diversity today? As with many changes over deep time, the answer lies in climate and its effect on the environment. By the mid-Miocene, apes were likely experiencing a phenomenon known as adaptive radiation. This biological process occurs when environmental changes unlock new opportunities for life to adapt, just as Charles Darwin theorized when he observed the great diversity of finches on the Galapagos Islands. As a result of the warm, humid conditions of the early Miocene, tropical forests covered a much more significant portion of the globe than they do now. Perfect for apes to proliferate. But these forests weren't all the same. For adaptive radiation to truly take effect, diversity is essential, and as the Miocene progressed and the climate began to gradually cool, a number of new types of habitat sprung up, offering plenty of new niches for Miocene apes to explore and adapt to. The world was still covered in trees, but each unique new environment presented its own set of challenges, prompting the apes to evolve new strategies to deal with them. Some, including Dryopithecus and Pyrrolopithecus, adapted to live in the newly formed temperate forests of Western Europe. Others, like Kenyopithecus and Capiramnogerensis, evolved to flourish in the mixed woodland grassland environments of Africa, the Middle East, and the northern regions of the Indian subcontinent. and Oreopithecus, meanwhile, inhabited the swamp forests of ancient Italy. This was a time of ecological experimentation, with different ape species venturing into new territories and adapting to varying lifestyles. Perhaps, over successive generations, they grew better and better adapted to these differing habitats. For example, species living in mixed woodland grasslands evolving to eat a number of new foods and losing their purely tree-dwelling features, or apes living in swampy forest habitats, developing traits that help them exploit the large volumes of water in their environments, just as modern-day Capuchin monkeys, which use stones to break open shellfish, have today. And so this explosion of habitats in the mid-Miocene provided the perfect crucible for evolutionary innovation among the apes. But how did so many species manage to live alongside one another? Generally, similarly adapted animals cannot survive in the same habitats without one eventually outcompeting the other. How did these ancient apes coexist? The answer is something called niche partitioning. To help grasp this concept, let's turn our gaze to the African savannas, where vast numbers of herbivores coexist in relative peace. Here, zebras graze on the tough, tall grasses, while antelopes browse on the more tender shoots and leaves, whereas giraffes, with their long necks, reach for leaves high up in the trees, a resource untouched by others. This separation in diet and foraging height is a classic example of niche partitioning, different species adapting to utilize various aspects of the same environment in distinct ways. And so back in the Miocene, a similar story unfolds among the ancient apes. With the discovery of Anadiluvius, Turkish excavations have now uncovered at least three genera of apes from the late Miocene, leading us to the fascinating conclusion that these primates likely lived alongside one another. Anadiluvius inhabited the Turkish landscape alongside Gryphopithecus and Ankaropithecus. Each of these ancient apes, with their distinct characteristics, found a way to thrive without the need to compete with each other for resources. Based on paleo-environmental reconstructions, Anadiluvius might have spent a good deal of its time on the ground, perhaps feeding on grasses, shrubs, and tubers. But nearby, Gryphopithecus tells a different story. Its dental and skeletal structure suggests a varied diet or foraging method. Perhaps more adapted to life in the lower tree canopy, Gryphopithecus fed on different fruits and nuts, or possibly even small vertebrates and insects, reducing competition with the other apes in the area. Ankaropithecus also carved out its own place in this ecosystem, occupying a completely different foraging height, possibly in the higher forest canopy, like modern-day orangutans. It might have exploited resources distinct from those of Anadiluvius and Gryphopithecus, such as fruits and leaves only found high up in the trees, its unique adaptations enabling it to thrive in a niche all its own. And so the Miocene epoch in Turkey perfectly presents a vivid tableau of life's adaptability and diversity. Anadiluvius, Gryphopithecus, and Ankaropithecus, each in their own way, demonstrate the incredible resilience and versatility of ancient apes. The Miocene epoch, therefore, was not just a planet of the apes in terms of the sheer number of species. It was a time of extraordinary evolutionary experimentation, a tangled jungle bursting with ape species. And so by comparison, our modern era seems little more than a sunny windowsill sporting a few potted houseplants. But things were about to change. The climate, once conducive to lush forests and abundant life, started to shift. A rapid cooling and drying trend took hold, transforming the landscapes that had long been the cradle of ape evolution. In central Anatolia and so many other parts of the world, the forests began to disappear. Indeed, perhaps this is why Anadiluvius' descendants may have uprooted themselves and ended up in Africa. Perhaps they were simply chasing the retreating forests. But in this changing world, not only did existing species have to try to adapt, a whole new kind of ape began to emerge. These creatures were perfectly adapted to the open grasslands that were becoming more and more prevalent. Their anatomy, particularly their ability to walk upright, allowed these hominins to rise to the challenges of a more open and varied landscape. Their emergence and the disappearance of the ancient apes marked a turning point in the story of primates, demonstrating just how unstable and ever-changing life on Earth really is. In the 1930s, Hong Kong is a bustling metropolis, a melting pot of alleys and lanes brimming with quirky shops and vibrant markets. On a particularly muggy afternoon in 1935, two men step into a time-worn apothecary. One is a local, and the other is a foreigner. The foreigner meanders through the cluttered shop, his gaze drifting over dried herbs and bottled tinctures with only vague interest. It's clear he's looking for something specific. He is Ralph von Koenigswald, and he has spent the last 5 years working in East Asia. He's currently in Hong Kong looking for an item believed to cure a range of ailments, from joint pain to digestive issues. But von Koenigswald's interest in it is far from medicinal. His local companion converses with the shopkeeper in rapid Cantonese, and the little man disappears behind the counter, only to reappear seconds later carrying a tray laden with an assortment of small items ranging in colour from pearly white to discoloured yellow. The shopkeeper calls them dragon teeth. Von Koenigswald, however, with his limited Cantonese, is only half listening. His eyes have been drawn to a particularly large specimen within the tray. For these dragon teeth are actually the teeth of fossilized mammals, and the big one is just what he's been searching for. During his time in Asia, von Koenigswald has been collecting such items in the hopes of furthering his research into the evolution of humanity. A cluttered little pharmacy in Hong Kong might seem like a strange place to conduct evolutionary research, but von Koenigswald has just discovered something momentous. For the tooth was more than a mere curiosity. His subsequent research reveals that the tooth belongs to a previously undiscovered species, not a dragon, but an extinct ape that was larger than any in known history. This colossal primate was Gigantopithecus, and our knowledge of this giant ape is limited to a handful of specimens, like the ones von Koenigswald found in Chinese pharmacies. Yet these scattered remains have enabled paleontologists to estimate the creature's formidable size, and it was huge. At roughly twice the size of a modern gorilla, Gigantopithecus not only highlights the astonishing diversity that once characterized the great ape family, but also serves as a poignant reminder that even the mightiest species can go extinct. Extinction represents the end of an evolutionary journey. But how does it work? Is it a slow, gradual decline, or the result of sudden, cataclysmic events? For Gigantopithecus, the former certainly appears to be the case, and for similar reasons that befell the Miocene apes some 5 to 10 million years earlier. And so to understand the true magnitude of loss within our own ape lineage, we must turn our attention back to the Miocene, specifically the middle and latter years of the epoch. Foraminifera, microscopic marine organisms, serve as crucial indicators of past climatic conditions. Their tiny, fossilized shells, found in sediment cores extracted from the ocean floor, provide a detailed record of oceanic temperature and chemistry over time. Studies of their fossils reveal that the Middle Miocene epoch was characterized by a significant peak in global temperatures, marking the warmest period since the balmier times of the Oligocene. Indeed, this period is often referred to as the mid-Miocene climatic optimum, but these warm conditions were not to last. Shifting ratios of oxygen isotopes in Miocene foraminifera show that a global cooling trend directly followed the climatic optimum, with temperatures plummeting by as much as 5 to 10 degrees in some regions. Scientists still don't know exactly what caused this transition from greenhouse to icehouse conditions, but it's likely that changes in the Earth's magnetic field, the expansion of polar ice sheets, and alterations in ocean circulations played a vital role. though what we can be sure of is that whenever the Earth's temperature changes by this magnitude, species go extinct. The Middle Miocene brought colder and drier conditions, leading to reductions in precipitation and the subsequent retreat of moisture-reliant ecosystems. In short, the forests were disappearing. For the Miocene apes, these changes were nothing short of catastrophic. Accustomed to the bountiful resources and protection of the forests, they now faced a world that offered them a terrifying ultimatum. Adapt or die. Paleoenvironmental reconstructions and the presence of animals like elephants, rhinos, antelope, and gazelle show that during this time, European ecosystems had been changed from mostly evergreen and lush forests to savanna-like landscapes with strong seasonal climates, reminiscent of the Serengeti in modern-day Tanzania. Apes, which typically rely on fresh leaves and fruits, were probably unable to survive in such habitats, especially since fruit would have been increasingly scarce during dry seasons. Some apes clung to their dwindling habitats, surviving in patches of forest amongst a landscape that was becoming drier and drier with each passing year. Perhaps it was these survivors that went on to birth the ape genera that currently inhabit the tropical forests of Asia and Africa, the chimpanzees, bonobos, gorillas, and orangutans. Meanwhile, species like Chororopithecus, Nycalopithecus, and Samburupithecus, all existing between 8 and 9 million years ago, right on the knife's edge, soon became extinct, probably because their East African homelands were rapidly being overrun by dry grasslands and savanna. Elsewhere, other Miocene apes ventured out of the forests to tentatively explore these new, open environments that lay waiting for them. Some of these pioneers became the hominins, the first humans. Appearing between 7 and 5 million years ago, they were not just survivors of a changing world, they were innovators and adapted to their new habitats. But for many apes, the transition to open environments was insurmountable. These grasslands, while a positive for those capable of thriving in drier habitats, were unforgiving to those adapted to a life in the trees. The specialized arboreal anatomy of many Miocene apes, which had once been so advantageous in the dense forests of bygone days, proved to be a hindrance in the open savanna. Oranopithecus and Graecopithecus, two European great apes, became extinct around 8 million years ago, coinciding with severe environmental change on the continent. The decline of these apes was not merely a consequence of changing landscapes, but also a reflection of their inability to adapt quickly enough to a rapidly changing world. In Asia, the Miocene apes held on for a few million years more, with Luthangpithecus, Meganthropus, and Gigantopithecus, possible relatives of the ancient Sivopithecus and modern orangutans, surviving in the still expansive forests there. But they too would eventually die out when environmental change wreaked havoc on their refugia. This pattern of survival versus extinction is a recurring theme in evolutionary history, and is still observable in the present day. From the ancient rivalry between Homo sapiens and Neanderthals about 40,000 years ago, to the modern-day competition between grey and red squirrels, the principle remains constant. The species better adapted to the prevailing conditions outcompetes its rivals. It's a stark reminder that survival hinges not necessarily on being the strongest or the smartest, but on the capacity to adapt. Take the Neanderthals. While it was once thought that they were somehow intellectually inferior to Homo sapiens, and that must have been the reason for their extinction, there is now robust evidence to show that they had particular vulnerabilities, such as slow reproductive rates, high calorie requirements, and smaller populations, all of which made it difficult for them to adapt to the increasingly tough environmental conditions as their world approached the last glacial maximum, when global ice coverage reached its zenith around 20,000 years ago. As a result, Homo sapiens, with faster reproduction, much lower calorie needs, and large interconnected populations, were able to outcompete the Neanderthals and claim the Pleistocene world as their own. So while it's entirely possible the Neanderthals might have died out as a result of climatic change anyway, it's also possible that they might still be around if they hadn't been beaten in the evolutionary arms race by our ancestors. This is the essence of competitive exclusion, a well-documented phenomenon in the natural world. As unforgiving as the catastrophic climatic shifts themselves, competitive exclusion dictates that two species vying for identical resources cannot indefinitely coexist. They may share an environment temporarily, as Homo sapiens and Neanderthals once did, but eventually, one will succumb to extinction, leaving the other to dominate. And the same principle was at play in the dwindling forests of the Miocene. Most Miocene apes, constrained by their specialist adaptations to forest life, found themselves competing in an ever-shrinking environment. Their dietary need for fresh fruit and plentiful leaves, coupled with their physical adaptations for climbing and swinging, were fine-tuned to a biome that was rapidly disappearing. In the face of such adversity, these apes struggled to find a foothold in the evolving ecosystem. As the forests shrunk, competitive exclusion would have put the arboreal, fruit-dependent apes under intense pressure. Species after species became extinct, with now only the best adapted being able to claim the lessening resources. Gigantopithecus was one of the later victims of the environmental changes, surviving into the Pleistocene, perhaps as little as 200,000 years ago. This colossal ape and its ancestors successfully competed through millions of years of competitive exclusion before it, too, became extinct due to its over-specialization and dependency on habitats that were no longer large enough to support it. Paleoenvironmental data and dental microwear analyses suggest that Gigantopithecus was an especially picky eater, akin to today's giant pandas. As the Pleistocene epoch progressed, significant climatic fluctuations led to the contraction of the once widespread bamboo forests, drastically reducing the availability of Gigantopithecus's primary food source. An early 2024 study published in Nature even found signs that by around 295,000 years ago, many Gigantopithecus individuals were experiencing chronic stress as a result of their dwindling food supply and disappearing habitats. Civopithecus, living in Southeast Asia around 12 million years earlier, tells a similar story, with wear patterns on its teeth suggesting an over-reliance on resources from forest habitats. Civopithecus, Gigantopithecus, and so many apes in between became extinct. And so now, only seven non-human great ape species exist. Bornean, Sumatran, and Tapanuli orangutans, chimpanzees, bonobos, and eastern and western gorillas. They inhabit only a tiny portion of the globe, a far cry from their numerous, widespread forebears that lived in the Miocene Planet of the Apes. But they still survive. As do we. The last remaining hominin, thanks largely to our fast reproduction, calorific needs, and population sizes, but our ancestors had also been outcompeting other sister and cousin species long before we outcompeted the Neanderthals. A genetic line exists, stretching back 5, 10, 15 million years from modern-day humans to the ancient Miocene apes. And along this line, we can find many times our ancestors prospered when others did not. How exactly then did we survive? In a secluded valley many thousands of years ago, two human figures wrapped in thick furs make their way along the banks of a muddy river. They reach the mouth of a cave, and stepping inside, one of the figures takes down his hood to reveal a pale, weather-beaten face. He is a descendant of the people who lived and hunted in this land for hundreds of generations. In one calloused hand, he clutches a notched spear, and in the other, a small oil lamp to light the way ahead. As these humans walk further, Careful not to slip on the wet floor, the cave walls begin to come alive. There are dots, lines, and hand stencils in vibrant reds, warm yellows, and streaking blacks. These works of art were made by the ancestral people of this land, each mark harking back to a once thriving culture. Perhaps the pale-faced human feels a profound connection to the people who made them, but also an acute sense of loss and isolation, for his people are swiftly vanishing from the world. Beside him, his companion takes down her hood. It's obvious from the first glance that they are different. She is tall and lean, while he is short and bulky. She is dark, where he is light. And yet, they were both born here, and they share an undeniable bond. For beneath her furs, she carries their child. By the time the last flickers of light from the oil lamp have faded from the cave, there are three new hand stencils on the wall. One from a Neanderthal, one from a Homo sapien, and one made by a little hand that belongs to someone who is both and neither at the same time. The child is a living bridge between two species. Groundbreaking genetic studies have shown that scenes such as this really existed. We also know that almost everyone on Earth has some Neanderthal DNA within them. Some of us have more, and some of us have less, it depends on where you come from, but almost all of us have it, hidden within our genetic code, like a lingering echo of an ancient species. It can be tempting to think then that the Neanderthals are not truly gone. But whilst this may be true of a good portion of their DNA, the same cannot be said of their species. No actual Neanderthal has existed for 30 to 40,000 years. Within around 10,000 years of Homo sapiens arriving in Eurasia, the Neanderthals simply ceased to be. Homo sapiens are now the last surviving hominin, and one of a handful of surviving great apes. So how did our ancestors survive through times when so many other species of ape did not? As the great forests of the Miocene shrunk, causing so much ape extinction, they also created a new opportunity for our branch of the family tree. Because as one biome decreases, another expands. The late Miocene was marked by a huge expansion in grasslands. Hominins adapted to these growing environments, their evolving traits giving them a distinct advantage over other Miocene apes. Specifically, they became bipedal, mastering the now advantageous ability of walking upright. Indeed, it is possible that walking on two legs was advantageous from the very beginning of the hominin story, around 6 to 7 million years ago. As far as we can tell, very early hominins, such as Sahelanthropus tchadensis and Ororin tugenensis, weren't too dissimilar from other apes of their time, other than being somewhat bipedal. We know they lived in a mosaic of habitats, from savanna woodland to gallery forests next to a lake, to open grasslands. Finding them in this range of diverse habitats suggests that even our earliest hominin ancestors may have been more adaptable than the ape cousins of their time, because of the fledgling ability to move on two legs. And bipedality would certainly play an even larger part of the story to come. Their descendants, the Homo genus, would walk exclusively on two legs, freeing their hands to evolve improved manual dexterity. This allowed them to craft complex tools to manipulate the world around them. And by the time of Homo habilis and Homo erectus, roughly 2 million years ago, hominins could travel farther and forage more effectively than any other apes up until this point had been able to, allowing them to utilize a variety of resources. This versatility was not just beneficial, it was crucial for our survival and proliferation of our lineage. Whereas Sivapithecus and Gigantopithecus were left vulnerable by their overly specialized diet, members of our own genus, Homo, were true generalists. They could adapt to eat pretty much anything that was available, and developed innovative techniques to get their hands on resources that would otherwise have been beyond their reach, like hunting weapons to take down large prey. Indeed, during this period, they extended and diversified across Southeast Asia, with no problems exploiting the newly changed environments that caused such strife among Gigantopithecus populations. But the Homo genus wasn't the only branch of hominin ape whose diet allowed it to survive outside of the forest. Paranthropus is a genus known for the robusticity of its specimens. At least three species belonging to this genus have been discovered, the most famous of which being Paranthropus boisei, or Nutcracker Man. With its massive teeth, powerful jaw, and huge cheekbones, Paranthropus boisei was once thought to have lived on nuts and other hard foods it could crack. However, later research has indicated it likely preferred softer plants and tubers, with its ability to ingest tougher foods a fallback mechanism it could survive on for extended periods if needed, much like gorillas can. And despite their seemingly primitive appearances, these robust hominins survived until about a million years ago. Until they too became extinct. And so we cannot be sure of the exact causes, but we can clearly see that our own Homo genus was better adapted to the changing world. Bipedal hominins had sprung from the ape family tree, walking out into the savannas and diversifying into many forms, until a time when only our genus remained. But what happened then? Why are we the only ones left? Homo erectus first appeared around 2 million years ago and lasted until some 100,000 years ago, albeit in small, isolated populations. Nevertheless, they lived longer than any other hominin species, and were the first hominins to spread around much of the old world. In their case, extinction didn't come as a result of any catastrophic event or sudden climate change. It was simply a gradual eclipse by successors more closely aligned with modern humanity. Homo erectus gracefully exited the stage, making way for newcomers like Homo heidelbergensis, from whom the lines of Homo sapiens, Neanderthals, and Denisovans would emerge. Just 300,000 years ago, as Homo sapiens emerged, there were at least seven other species of human walking the planet. And as with the disappearance of Paranthropus, scientists debate a range of factors that led to our survival and their extinction. Even though these human species had mastered fire, refined stone tools, and evolved complex social networks, the changing climate likely still played a huge role. Though they had developed so many more survival tools than their Miocene ape forebears, many of their lives were still tied to certain habitats. Indeed, climate studies offer strong evidence that both Neanderthals and Homo heidelbergensis lost a significant portion of their climatic niches just before going extinct. And of course, it is also difficult to ignore that the extinction of several human species coincides with the spread of Homo sapiens across the globe. Early hypotheses included our species actively hunting other humans to extinction, but there is little evidence for this. The reality was likely less premeditated, but no less deadly. Just as they did with the Neanderthals, our species outcompeted every other species of human. Homo sapiens had higher birth rates than many other hominins, leading to large interconnected populations that could better weather the hardships brought by the changing Earth. And though the notion of Neanderthals and some other human species as primitive and dim-witted is outdated, it is possible that a number of small innovations gave Homo sapiens a large enough advantage to outcompete the rest. For example, needles for weaving or sewing have been found near sapiens remains from both 30,000 and 35,000 years ago. Once we could weave, we could craft items such as baskets to carry larger amounts of food or traps to snare animals. Sewing unlocks the ability to seal materials together, which might, for instance, allow you to create a better insulated tent to keep infants warm, further boosting the sapiens population size. Such inventions could have been spread quickly through the large, socially connected populations that Homo sapiens lived in, further enhancing their adaptive advantage over their sibling species. And on top of this, as we know from finding hybrid Neanderthal and Homo sapien fossils, there was also a degree of assimilation at play. Evidence suggests that sapiens interbred with Neanderthals, as well as other species from within our genus. As such, they have contributed DNA that lives on through us. But they themselves, as a species, all joined the multitude of ape species in total extinction. And so how can we define the story of the apes? Is it a tragedy or a triumph? On the one hand, the remarkable diversity and adaptability exhibited by the great ape lineage over millions of years certainly points to a significant evolutionary achievement. Back in the Miocene, apes had branched out into an array of distinct forms, from proconsul to gigantopithecus, with each species adapted to the unique ecological niches found across Africa, Asia, and Europe. This striking diversification speaks volumes about the evolutionary resilience of apes, and our evolutionary journey underscores not just a survival story, but one of thriving adaptability and versatility. Despite the decline in the number of great ape species, leaving us with just 4 living genera, apes have maintained a continuous presence on Earth for at least 23 million years. The species alive today, from the gorillas of Virunga to the Sumatran orangutans, and all the species in between, are remarkable survivors. Just as our hominin ancestors weathered the storm of the Miocene extinction event, so did the ancestors of the modern great apes. Consider Civopithecus, an ancient ape that roamed Asia some 12 million years ago. Their fossilized remains offer valuable clues, particularly in their locations and morphology. These clues suggest an extinct species, but not a vanished lineage. According to a phylogenetic study published in the Journal of Human Evolution, which mapped the physical features of various fossil apes against each other, Civopithecus exhibits a strikingly close connection to today's orangutans, possibly even as direct ancestors, or a sister taxon. And so just as a part of extinct humans lives on in us, so does the essence of a species like Civopithecus endure, not in physical form, but through its genetic and evolutionary impact on its descendants. But today, orangutans, gorillas, and chimpanzees cling on in ever-diminishing habitats, their future looking decidedly bleak. The world has changed considerably since the one that bloomed their earliest ancestors. Ape-inhabited forests no longer stretch over vast swathes of the Earth. From this perspective, it would seem that the planet of the apes has well and truly fallen. But that would be ignoring one very significant ape. Us. Our global population numbers in the billions, and our widespread presence across nearly every continent and environment on Earth is testament to our adaptability and success. Apes, then, are everywhere on Earth. Humans exist in one sense as successors to many of the ancient apes, the latest in a long list stretching back millions of years. We carry not just the DNA of extinct human species, but that of extinct Miocene apes as well. You've been watching The Entire History of Humankind. Don't forget to like and subscribe and leave us a comment to tell us what you think. Thanks for watching, and we'll see you next time.